Police searched Gacy's home and found the decomposed remains of three bodies in a dirt crawl space under the house.
Tomorrow marks 30 years since Johnny Gosch disappeared on his paper route.
I just killed my mom and my sister.
The city is preoccupied with a killer who in one note signed himself the Son of Sam.
The East Area Rapist, just when you thought the story couldn't get any worse.
Wrists and ankles chained, gagged, probably blindfolded.
We have an individual who apparently has the uncontrollable desire to kill.
It's Murder Monday on the Joe and Alex Show. Listener discretion is advised.
The reason we do Murder Monday is to bring attention to Crime Stoppers. They let you anonymously give tips on any unsolved crime that might be in your area. This number, 1-800-222-TIPS. That's 1-800-222-TIPS. Alex, what are you talking about today for Murder Monday?
One of the most mysterious frenzies to grip the city of New Orleans came in the early 1900s with the arrival of the Axeman. In May 1980, something or someone was terrorizing the city. His arrival sparked terror in the city that would last for the next year and a half. The residents of New Orleans would spend each night listening to every sound, looking at every shadow, and would open their newspapers with trembling hands each morning. The Axeman had come to the city, and no one was safe, so it seemed. Some people start to believe that he's not a man at all, but a supernatural creature that is able to appear and disappear at will. Others think he's simply a demented serial killer who hacked off the heads of his victims while they slept. On May 23, 1918, an Italian grocery store owner named Joseph and his wife Catherine are sound asleep when the killer breaks into their house. The mysterious man cut the couple's throats with a straight razor, and before leaving, he bashes their heads with an axe. Joseph survives the attack, but dies minutes later after being discovered by his brothers, Jake and Andrew. Catherine dies just minutes before her husband's brothers arrive. Her throat had been cut so deep that her head was nearly severed from her shoulders.
Oh my gosh.
In the apartment, law enforcement agents find the bloody clothes of Joseph and Catherine's murderer. It looked like he had changed into a clean set of clothes before fleeing the scene. A razor used on the couple is found on the lawn of a neighbor, and an axe coated in their blood is found in their apartment. Police rule out a robbery as motivation for the attacks because money and valuables were left in plain sight and were not stolen by the intruder. Police figure out that the razor used to kill the couple belonged to Andrew, Joseph's brother who found him. His employee told police that Joseph's brother had removed the razor from his barber shop just 2 days prior to the murders and had said that he wanted to have a nick honed from the blade. Andrew, who lived in the adjoining apartment to his brother Joseph, discovered his dead brother and sister-in-law about 2 hours after the gruesome attacks had occurred, after he heard strange groaning noises through the walls. Andrew said he didn't know the attack had happened at first because he was drunk and didn't notice. He said he had gotten home after a late night of celebrating because he was about to join the Navy. Police find it a little hard to believe that Andrew hadn't heard the break-in and the initial attack, and Andrew becomes the police chief's prime suspect in the crime. But he ends up getting released because there just isn't enough evidence to convict him.
This sounds like every Murder Monday, by the way. It's like, how do you not have enough? I guarantee at the end it's going to be overwhelming evidence.
Well, funny you say that, Joe. Just keep listening. Investigators begin digging into old files, looking for possible cases that match this murder, and to their surprise, they discover that three murders and a number of attacks against Italian grocers had already taken place in 1911. The murders bear a striking resemblance to this crime because an axe had been used in each case, and access to each home had been gained through a panel in the back door. Police originally thought these crimes had been acts of terror organized by the mafia, but now the police and the Italian residents of the French Quarter brace themselves for the worst. Almost exactly a month after Joseph and Catherine's murder comes a second crime. Louis, a grocer who lived behind a store with his wife Annie, are discovered by neighbors one morning, lying in a pool of their own blood. Louis is badly injured but not dead. Beside him is Annie, also injured but amazingly not dead. Both of them had been hacked with an axe. The weapon is lying next to Louis, and it's also covered with blood. A panel of the kitchen door had been removed, a chisel is lying on the back steps, and nothing had been stolen. After Annie regains consciousness, she says her attacker had been young and had dark skin. But then, she changes her story and says Louis had attacked her husband. The police are skeptical, though, because they realize how impossible it would be for Lewis to have attacked Annie and then fractured his own skull with an axe. After Lewis recovers from his injuries, he's released. They don't have evidence to charge him either.
Yeah, that makes no sense, but okay.
Later on that year in August, a woman named Mrs. Edward Schneider wakes up in the night to see a tall, phantom-like form standing over her bed. She screams just as the axe falls. A few minutes later, her neighbors find her unconscious with her head gashed and bloody and several of her teeth knocked out. She miraculously survives. A few nights later, another Italian grocer named Joseph Romano is attacked. Not to be confused with the first Joseph. This attack is just like the others, but this time he does not survive. He dies a few hours later and is never able to provide any clue as to the identity of the Axeman. By this time, hysteria is sweeping through the city. Families take turns being lookouts at night and standing guard over their relatives as they sleep. People walk around in the dark with loaded shotguns and wait for the news of the latest Axeman sightings. On August 11th, the killer is seen in the neighborhood of Tulane and Broad, masquerading as a woman, the rumors say. So a manhunt is organized, but no one finds this guy dressed as a woman. On August 21st, a man is seen leaping a back fence, but despite a quickly organized search party, the mysterious man escapes again. Were these sightings real or just the fright-fueled imaginations of scared citizens? In the next couple weeks, three more people find evidence that the Axeman had tried but failed at breaking into their houses. Then, as mysteriously as he had come, the Axeman vanishes, at least for a while. When we come back, we finish the story of the most puzzling serial killer in New Orleans history, the Axeman, for Murder Monday on the Joe and Alex Show.
And I'm wondering, Alex, if you go to our Instagram at Joe and Alex Show, what photos are up there today of the Axeman?
Okay, so there is a photo that I posted last night saying that we were going to be talking about this story, but it's actually a picture of the actor from American Horror Story, because this whole story is covered in a couple episodes of season 3, Coven, and there's no pictures, though, of the actual Axeman because, well, it's like the early 1900s and nobody's taking Instagram photos back then.
Excuse me, Axeman, would you pose for a photo? Don't move for 1 minute. Thank you.
Yeah, so I did ask an interesting question, though, of which city do you think is the most haunted city in America on Instagram last night, which you can answer at Joe and Alex Show, because New Orleans is a really haunted city. Like, they're known for voodoo and hauntings and all kinds of stuff. So I wanted to know if you have a city that you think is the most haunted.
I feel like anywhere, like, where the Civil War happened.
Yes.
I feel like that's got to be a haunted place.
So we left off with a mysterious axe-wielding serial killer terrorizing New Orleans in the early 1900s, named the Axeman. In the early morning hours of March 10th, 1919, the Axeman strikes again. It's his most terrible crime yet. A woman named Mrs. Cortimiglia, the wife of a grocer just across the river from New Orleans, wakes up to find her husband struggling with a large man in dark clothing who's armed with an axe. As her husband falls into a bloody heap on the floor, Mrs. Cortimiglia holds her 2-year-old daughter in her arms and begs her attacker for mercy, at least for the child. But the axe comes down anyway, killing the little girl and fracturing the skull of her mother. The police are once again stumped, and rumblings begin to suggest that perhaps the Axeman really isn't a man at all. Some claim that he might be a woman or a little person, enabling him to slip through the small space that he cut in the doors when he would break into these houses. But others think that he's a creature from the world beyond. How else, they wondered, could all of the witnesses describe the killer as being a large man when only a small person could have slipped through the chiseled panels in the back doors? The killer had to have come in through supernatural means, as each door was still locked when the attacks were discovered. After the Cortimiglia murders, New Orleans is again filled with terror. The police say that they believe all the crimes have been committed by the same man, a bloodthirsty maniac filled with passion for human slaughter. And perhaps they were right. On Friday, March 14th, 1919, the editor of the New Orleans Times newspaper receives a letter from a man who claims to be the Axeman. The letter says, "They have never caught me and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish police call the Axeman. When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know who they will be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with blood and brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but His Satanic Majesty. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover who I am, for it were better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I don't think there is any need of such a warning, for I feel sure the police will always dodge me, as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep away from all harm. Undoubtedly, you Arlinians think of me as your most horrible murderer, which I am, but I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city nearly every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, I am going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I am going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I am very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whose house a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well, then so much better for the people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of your people who do not jazz it up on Tuesday night will get the axe. Signed, The Axeman. The people of New Orleans do their best to follow the Axeman's instructions. Restaurants and clubs all over town that Tuesday are jam-packed with people. Friends and neighbors gather in their homes to jazz it up, and by midnight, the city is alive with jazz music everywhere. Banjos, guitars, and mandolins strum into the night, while Joseph Davila, a well-known local composer, creates the theme song for the night. He titles his composition, The Mysterious Axeman's Jazz, and in typical New Orleans fashion, it becomes a huge hit. When the sun rises the next morning, not a single attack had occurred that night. Even though it was unlikely that every single house was filled with the sounds of jazz, the Axeman passed the city by, perhaps satisfied with the celebration that was held in his honor. All is quiet for some time until the night of August 3rd, 1919. In the middle of the night, a young girl named Sarah Lawman is attacked with an axe while she sleeps in her locked house. She gets a brain concussion, but she lives. Even though Sarah doesn't die, the attack pushes hysteria into the city to new heights. Sarah Lawman was not the owner of a grocery store. She was not Italian, and her attacker had not entered through a door panel, but a window this time. In other words, if he could attack Sarah Lawman, then no one was safe. Was it really the Axeman, though, or an imitator? No one knew for sure. On August 10th, a man named Steve Boca stumbled from his house with axe wounds in his skull. Dripping blood, he manages to make it to his friend's house about a half block away. Steve's friend treats the wounds as best as he can and then calls for help. The police search Steve's house and find the classic signs of the Axeman, the chiseled door panel and the bloody axe left lying on the floor. On September 2nd, a local pharmacist named William Carson fires several shots at an intruder who had broken into his house. The intruder leaves a broken door and an axe behind, but manages to escape without injury. Then in October, the Axeman appears again for a final slaughter. A grocer named Mike Pepitone is butchered in his bed during the night. His wife and six children asleep in the next room are not harmed. The usual clues had been left behind, but the authorities are no closer to learning the identity of the man who had been terrorizing New Orleans for more than a year. This was the last murder attributed to the Axeman. He is never seen or heard from in New Orleans again. No one has ever learned the true identity of the Axeman, or did they? More than a year after the Axeman's final appearance, a former New Orleans man named Joseph Mumphrey is shot to death on the West Coast. He had been killed by a woman named Esther Albano, who was later to be discovered as the widow of the Axeman's last victim. So police start working to try and untangle the mystery that probably linked this Joseph man's murder to the Axeman case. Some curious coincidences are revealed during the investigation. Joseph Mumphrey had once been the leader of a gang of blackmailers in New Orleans who had preyed on Italians. He had also been, for a separate matter, sent to prison just after the first axe murders in 1911. In the summer of 1918, he was paroled. At the same time, the Axeman appeared again. Immediately after the last Axeman murder, this Joseph Mumphrey guy had left New Orleans for the West Coast, and strangely, the Axeman had vanished as well. In spite of this, there was no actual evidence to link him to any of the crimes. To this day, the city of New Orleans gets chills when they hear the mysterious Axeman's jazz, because the Axeman was never caught.
Ooh.
This was an unsolved one. I never do unsolved ones, and I never do historical old murders. So what did you guys think?
I think it kind of sounded like a Joe and Alex Show book buddies.
Really? It sounded like a book, a story?
Hey, kids. Now, with this one, I kind of got confused, I'll be honest. I don't know if it tripped anybody else up. But when you said, hey, guys, I'm doing it on the Axeman, I'm like, is this like the Axe body spray guy? Like, like all you have is this scent left behind.
No, but there were tons of guys when I was in middle school that definitely knocked some people out with as much spray on deodorant as they were using in the locker rooms.
You know what satisfaction I get out of this story?
What?
Knowing that the Axeman is dead.
That's true. This is forever ago.
I'm still alive. All right, that's Murder Monday here on the Joe and Alex Show on Radio Now.